Buddha, Sri Dharma, Sri Sangha. For a moment, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Talk about one of the most wonderful insights that is given to a person at the time that these things are happening. One of the most wonderful, one of the most comforting, one of the most helpful, one of the most constantly present understanding, really, of what's really going on at such a time. And one sees that one's eyes are opened to what is actually going on all the time, and we are just most of the time not so aware of it. I'm going to use a peculiar example to show how this is the case, or try to show how this is the case, and hope that it doesn't kind of backfire in my face here. I remind you again about where the attack of Mara came in this whole narrative. And first of all, let's just remind us what the attack of Mara is. It's really the everything in the kitchen sink coming at you to prevent you from going forward. Everything from within you, everything from without seems to come together all at once in a big crunch. And where does it come here? It comes right before the biggest past life, the crucial key past life that needs to be able to come up. And what is it that is embodied in that? What is the nature of the need? It's this profundity of ignorance and despair. So just, you know, think for a moment how perfect the timing is of this. Remember what I said about Mara, that Mara isn't the enemy. Mara is that which helps you develop the faith to the utmost, to the perfection. Helps you develop faith to perfection. And for the deepest need to be met by the compassion and wisdom of the Eternal, our part is to provide that perfect faith. So here you have this perfect timing. The big Mara attack comes just before the biggest need surfaces. And in my experience, that's always how it works. That just when the biggest need is coming to the surface is when everything within you and everything without you, outside of you, seems to conspire to try to hold you back, prevent you from allowing that need to come all the way to the surface and get the help it needs, that it so longs for. And if we remember that Mara is the servant of the Eternal, one who gets the least appreciation, understandably, but this is the proof of a true bodhisattva, never asks for the appreciation, just takes it as part of the job that is not appreciated. But when one sees with enlightened eyes, one does appreciate. It's just one's very careful about Mara too. You can appreciate Mara without wanting to succumb to Mara, because Mara will always continue to do Mara's job. There's no self in it. It's just Mara's job is to test. So everything that looks like the good alternative, and every reason not to go on, and every fear, and every resentment, and every pull towards mean-spiritedness and downward looking, it all comes up at such a time. And that's just what's being described there. In the pictures, you know, there's the great big black hands coming up underneath, and it feels like that. And look at the timing. It's so perfect. And you can go through this whole book and look at the timing. It's so perfect. What is controlling that timing? Well, it's not me. It's not you. It's not Urban Master here. It's the Eternal. The timing is the Eternal's. Where there is a great need, a great help arises. At every step of the way, one is, whether one knows it or not, one is safely in the hand of the Eternal. The Eternal isn't going to do our job for us. That we have to do. But too often we think we're the one doing the heavy lifting. And in fact, the Eternal is always the one doing the heavy lifting. That's why it's so important we do not succumb to self-pity. Self-pity is just the other side of pride. Don't go that way. And self-pity is still putting self first, which is what pride is. Don't go that way. We are not the victim of our karma. We are the beneficiary of our karma. There's a big difference. Still have to work at doing the right thing with it. In the Old Testament, there's a little verse, do not kick against the pricks. The pricks refer to the goads they use to keep the oxen moving, I believe. And it says, you know, the verse is, you know, I don't know where it's found. I just remember it from the Old Testament somewhere. Do not kick against the pricks. And don't kick against Mara. Just don't go along with Mara. Just don't succumb to the delusion. And bow. Always bow. Every step of the way, the Eternal is bringing together the need, the need and the help in whatever form these two are manifesting at the time. The happy meeting. There's no comprehending intellectually. There's no intellectual possibility of intellectually comprehending the way this works. One can have insight into it sufficient to give rise to a great appreciation for this amazing compassion. No one, no matter what state they find themselves, no being, no matter what state they find themselves, is ever separate from the Eternal, from the compassion of the Eternal. One other thing I want to say before we go on, to reiterate what I was saying yesterday about the plates entitled The Appearance in the Hall of Shadows, the point at which the tiger seems to dissolve down into an infinitesimal point, and then from that point is born a little Buddha, first a little teardrop shape, and then the Buddha. These are the images of Reverend Master's experience at the time. And as I was attempting to point out, which is sometimes a difficult point for people to get, is that what's important here is the teaching that these images are expressing, as in all the visions. And the teaching is that conversion is a reality and that it happens. And this is, to me, the great miracle, that conversion happens. And this is greed, hate, and delusion. The very essence of greed, hate, and delusion, the distilled down essence of the essential koan, the essential spiritual problem that's been being worked on, carried, amplified, de-amplified through the whole stream of karma. This is distilled down essence of ignorance and confusion, receiving its help from the eternal and becoming enlightened. And this is the truly great spiritual miracle. Something that no human being can claim to be able to do. No one does this. The Eternal does it. And we allow our body and mind to be the vehicle for this activity of the Eternal, within the safe context of the precepts, having taken the precepts to heart. This is what we were born to do, to be a part of, what we were born to help the Eternal in this magnificent work. The next plate is called The Spirit Rises to Greet the Lord. She says, "For the rest of that day I was in deep meditation. It is now the morning of the 28th of October, I believe, and I am lying in bed having just awakened. I am conscious of the fact that the golden Buddha within me is moving. It seems to be going upwards. It reaches my throat, goes up the back of my head, and sits on top of it. From there it moves to the front, where it leaves a mark upon my forehead. I feel it to be the mark of a small Buddha, as if someone has imprinted a tiny Buddha there. But there's also something left outside on top of my head. After the mark has been imprinted, that which first moved moves on, going within me through the mark on my forehead, down the front of me, and again stays in my hara, which, from having been dark the day before, now seems to be filled with white light. I know that there is something that I need to hear. I do not know what it is. I know that absolute stillness is necessary. There are other monks in the room. It is almost as though I do not want them to breathe, for the slightest sound should not be heard. Here is the first full description of the circulation happening, experienced within the body, the bodily aspect of what I call the great circulation. The golden Buddha is within me is moving. Remember, it's in the hara. It's moving. It moves upwards, goes to the throat, then to the back of the head, then sits on top of the head, then comes in again. It moves to the front where it leaves a mark on the forehead. It's as if there is a mark of a tiny Buddha there imprinted. It moves on through the mark down the front of me and again stays in my hara. This is the circulation. Up the back, down the front, back into the hara. Later on, this is experienced more fully in other aspects. Here's an interesting way to look at the little tiny Buddha that she's having a vision of doing this. Suppose you had a circulating air current. Somehow there was this little whirlwind. Let's say a little whirlwind. And you're standing a ways away from it. How do you see the whirlwind and learn that it's there? If there's nothing in the whirlwind, you can't see it or know that it's there. If you're far enough away not to feel it with your body, the movement of the wind on your body, you don't even know it's there, do you? You only know it by what it's picking up of dust and leaves and things and whirling around. We've all seen these. Those of us who are more fortunate probably have not seen it happen in the form of a tornado, which I never have, but I've seen plenty of these little whirlwinds out in the country, you know, and freshly, often in like freshly plowed fields in the summertime, you know. The dark earth gets hot and the air above it gets hot and it starts whirling and you get these little twisters, which I always get a kick out of myself. They pick up the dust and you see these little twisters of dust moving across the ground. Well, this water, the spirit circulating here is like circulating air that you can't see. So the Eternal throws a little Buddha into it and is showing her master how the Buddha moves or how the circulation moves. There's a marker in it. There's a marker in the circulation. The important thing is the circulation, the turning of the wheel of the law. What is the turning of the wheel of the law? It is the fundamental movement of the spirit that allows the process of conversion to happen. It is the process of conversion. It's a better way to put it. It is the process of conversion. Continually, in our training, every time you meditate, in your daily training, you're going about, whether you know it or not, this is happening, that the raw material of enlightenment, which is the greed, hate, and delusion in all its seemingly sometimes infinite aspects, the karmic need, is constantly filtering into the stream of the water of the spirit and being carried in that stream. And as it's carried, circulating, it is being cleansed, converted. By what means is it being cleansed and converted? By the combination of our meditative effort, our resolve to follow the way of the precepts, our activity of faith in body, speech, and mind, and above everything else in our heart of hearts. By the combination of that with the grace and the infinite love of the Eternal. So that this circulation is the continual mixing and blending of these two. All the metaphors, by the way, break down if you start to try to figure them out with your head. No one understands this. No one understands this. Most people don't even know it exists. But those who know it exists don't understand it. And it is the reality of our lives. Years ago, many years ago, it was 1989, I believe it was, in the spring, I told River Master about something that happened to me when I was up here. I was down at the Abbey visiting River Master. I told her about something that happened to me. And I'm not, it's something in this process that's described in the book. I'm not going to say what it was. And River Master said, oh, yes, well, that's, she never told me about it, by the way. She said, oh, yes, that's just how it happens. Then, after I talked with her, when I went to meditate after that for some time, I don't remember, days or a week or two maybe, every time I meditated, I'd have this vision of this golden light circulating, golden light or golden water, just circulating in this endless flowing circular motion, like a kind of a golden spinning donut. I'd have this, and the teaching that came with this quietly, not in words or anything, this is not like some spectacular vision, this is like what was in my mind's eye, you might say, but I wasn't trying to have it there, it was just there, present during this time. It was just the teaching that went with it is, well, this is really the reality of everything. This is what is real. You know, this, the appearance of this body and mind, of this physical world we live in, the material world and everything, that's all transitory. That's all transitory. This is not transitory. It may be in constant motion. It is in constant motion, but it does not come and go. It's not created by us. It isn't destroyed by us. Can't be created or destroyed by us. It is. It's the reality of what we are. So, I will say this much about what I described to Reverend Master. It was the offer from the Eternal to me to at a whole new level, join that process as a volunteer with the understanding that there was going to be a real price to pay. And I'm very fortunate that the yes to it came up in me as an overwhelming rush before my head had time to think about it. I was lucky about that. For the next 5 years, I thought about it. And at another point, Reverend Master had to help me get unstuck on that. That scared me. The implication scared me. But as is the case always with fear, it was really about shadows. Reverend Master cut right through it when the time came. That's why we have a master. By the way, well, we need a master. So as the little Buddha moves, it moves to key points that later a master learned more about. Key points in the body. How can I describe the body in this process? I'm going to say the body is of the Eternal. Our body is of the Eternal. It's why, you know, all the precepts apply in some way, each of the precepts applies in some way to what we do with our bodies, as well as what we do with our thoughts, and our, you know, our speech, and our, they, and it's a very important that that is the case because, you know, the body rightly used is the vehicle, body and mind together rightly used as a vehicle for this, within which this work can happen, within which this circulation can happen. The circulation is not depend on the body. The body is not born with the body, it does not die with the body. And if we allow it to do so, it can make use of the body as the pipe, body and mind, I should say, as the pipe, the skandhas, you know, the five skandhas, body, feeling, thought, volition, and consciousness itself. That's together, you know, all together, the five skandhas make up what we call body and mind. Body and four minds. The skandhas are one body skandha, four mind skandhas make five skandhas. It's just a Buddhist way of talking about, and a helpful way to talking about body and mind. Body and mind are the pipe that for this lifetime contain this circulating stuff. It's also greater than this pipe. It's both contained within it and greater than. You might say the body is just a kind of temporary external appearance of it. So these are remnants of being shown what are significant points here in the process. And it's more than that, because something is happening as this movement happens, you see. Something is happening as this movement happens. Something spiritual is happening. The enlightening that begins with that little dissolving of the, or distilling down of the karmic essence into that little dot and its remanifestation as a little point of light, experienced by Rinpoche Master here in the form of a Buddha, but it's, you know, spiritual light. The Buddha nature of what was always there, the Buddha nature manifesting itself there. Lost myself in my long sentence. Anyway, that is now the marker of the circulation, which is now the deepening, the broadening of the enlightenment that has begun. That's why, note, note that what's being, how it's being experienced here. It again stays in Mahara, which after having been dark the day before now seems to be filled with white light. And this is a common experience of people who meditate. By the way, at times the Mahara seems dark. And it can be sometimes it can feel like the darkness of accumulated muck. And at that point, it's often a kind of an anguished. It is. That's anguished in the Hara. It kind of feeling like a tearing or an anguish in the Hara. And it can also be experienced as a darkness that is impregnated with light. And that is the darkness of the stillness and the infinity of the eternal, kind of shot through with points of light, like a kind of night sky with the Milky Way, a dark, dark night sky with the Milky Way, like that. And then it can also at times be experienced, as Rinpoche Master is starting to experience here, as full of light, maybe initially white, then maybe golden. What does this mean? What does this mean? You know, look at the word enlightenment. That which was obscure, that which is in ignorance, is getting the compassion wisdom direct now, and is becoming enlightened. And what is going to be the payoff of this? It's going to be a long process in which a whole new level of the teaching is revealed to Riven Master, in which a whole new understanding of how to live her life in the future is revealed. A whole new level of it, I should say. We'll stop there for the day. It's the Buddha, it's the Dharma, it's the Sangha.